Hi, everyone. My name is John. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. Welcome to the Canadians over there. I'm not going to use my cell phone. I'm just going to use it as a timer here. I just got very limited time. How many are here for their very first international convention? Can I see her? Wow. Well, that shocked me. Because, you know, the reason I asked, because I've been talking to people for the last few days, and I've seen lots of, many numbers of people for their first international, but that just overwhelmed me. Welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is John. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And because I am a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and by the grace of the power I found through the 12-step program out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, I am found it necessary to take a drink of alcohol since June 26th, 1984. And for this, I'm very grateful. So if you get that date, you just realize that I just celebrated my 31st birthday last Friday. And you know who you're clapping for? You're clapping for Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I couldn't have done that on my own. I assure you of that. My topic this morning is tools of sobriety. And I really just finished telling you the tools for sobriety in my introduction. You know, I told you I'm a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told you I have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. You know, that's the two main tools that I found for sobriety. I'm going to talk a little bit about the aspects of those two tools, because there are a few aspects to them. You know, but the fellowship and the program are the main tools. Fellowship was very important to me. You know, when I came to the fellowship, and you won't hear me ever say I came to the program, because I didn't. I came to a room full of alcoholics who called themselves alcoholics. And I came to that room, and I found out when I came to that very first meeting on June 26th of 1984 that they're waiting for me. And the fellowship was important then, and the fellowship is just as important today, if not more, probably. You know, the fellowship is made up of several aspects, as I said. You know, one of those aspects is the meetings. You know, that's part of the fellowship. Going out for coffee. I don't know if any of you have where you come from, the meeting after the meeting. You know, but we have that. And that's part of the fellowship. You know, sponsorship really is part of the fellowship. You know, being at conventions and conferences is part of the fellowship. You know, being around recovering and recovered alcoholics is part of the fellowship. You know. And that's just one aspect of it. You know, I can't tell you that the fellowship changed me. You know, the fellowship was a great support and was a great contributor to my recovery. But the fellowship didn't change me. It was the other part of our solution that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous that really changed me. I'm going to stop right there because I kind of push myself a little fast here. You know, I want to thank our delegate from Area 80 for submitting my name to be part of this panel here. I want to thank GSO for the loving invitation. You know, this Atlanta, boy, you know, this has been Southern hospitality, you know, that I always heard about. You know, I don't know about you all, but, man, you know, you all having a good time here this week? Yeah? I tell you, I am too. You know, I've been here a week. I came here last Sunday night. And you spend a week in Atlanta and you start thinking you're Rhett Butler or something, you know? And frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a... yeah. But I'm very grateful for this opportunity. So get back here now. You know, the fellowship is that first aspect of my recovery. You know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is what has really changed me and what I found in that program. You know, as I said, the program also is made up of several aspects. You know, the program is the 12 steps. You know, a fellowship, the sponsorship is part of the program. I needed help understanding these steps. And I brought with me some cheat sheets here. I'm really sorry that I brought these cheat sheets. You know, it's a cheat sheet that has 32 Roman numerals and 164 pages of regular numbers. It's called the Big Book. That's my cheat sheet for today. You know, but I'm so grateful that I had the explanation found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, so that's part of the sponsorship was very important. Last Friday, as I told you, about this time now, I was coming off a 4-day drunk, and I picked up the phone. It was a Tuesday morning. I picked up the phone and I called our central office in Winnipeg, and I reached out for help, and I used those words, I need help. And there was a man that was come over to my home, and he was to do what I was to later find out, a 12-step call. And he was a gray-haired old man, like I see a number of you here, looked just like him. And he came over by himself. His name was Don. We called him Dudley. You know, he had such a bad speech impediment, he stuttered very prevalently, especially when he was nervous. I think that morning he was a little bit nervous. But you see, that didn't matter to me. I don't even remember what he said that morning. But he spoke what I was to later understand, the language of the heart. He spoke one alcoholic to another. And he shared, I'm sure, his experience, strength, and hope with me. And he came back that night and took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm an anomaly, or however you say it. You know, I came to that first meeting, and I've never gone back from that day to this day. And I know there are numbers of people that can't make that statement. I know many, many people have gone in and out and in and out. Some people have gone out and they haven't been able to come back. And I'm sure you know lots of them too. But I was able to do that because of the tools that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was able to not do that. I came close. I was talking to my friends from Hawaii here. I was barely a year sober. And me and my wife went on a little trip to Hawaii. And I came that close, that trip, to picking up a drink in Hawaii. And I'm sure it would have been my last. I don't think I would have came back from that trip, really. But I came close. But I used the tools. I used the tools that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sorry, I just got to get this timer up here so I don't run over. Should have just had a watch that I'm looking at. Technology. I'll use my watch from here on in. You know, but that man came over. He took me to my first meeting. You know, Don was very special. I'm going to talk about a few people that were very special in my life, because that was part of the fellowship, and it was also part of the program. You know, Don took me to that meeting. I was sober a couple of years. In those 2 years, there was another man in Winnipeg, where I came from, that was very important to me. He took me for the first time through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. His name was Austin. He's a great man, great, 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 great member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was my beginning. Really, that was my beginning. After 2 years of going to lots and lots of meetings, things weren't really changing a lot in my life. I was staying sober, but I wasn't really changing a lot. I ran into some other men, and they became so very important in my life. Their names were Jojo and Charlie. And I'm not stuttering when I say Jojo, because there was two Joes. I don't know if you all know that. But those two Joes and Charlie, what they did for me, they made the big book come alive. And they gave me a better understanding. And they gave me a fire for the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they gave me a fire for my recovery. And I started working the steps in a different, little bit different way than I had understood them in those first 2 years. And my life has been in a constant state of change because of that. And I owe these men. You know, the tools of sobriety. You know, when you get electronics, like this silly cell phone here, you get a book, an owner's manual. And in that owner's manual, in anything you buy, tools, power tools or electronics, they have instructions on how to use them. And I found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous the instructions for taking the steps, the 12 steps of recovery. And that is my owner's manual today. And that is the message that I try to carry today, is the message contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's one more man that was very important in my life. A man by the name of Don P. from Aurora, Colorado. Don, yes, woohoo is right. Don was very, very important in my life. And he always told this story. And I want to end off with this story that Don used to talk about this man by the name of Michelangelo and the Statue of David. I don't know if any of you have ever heard that story, but Don used to tell it all the time. And this man asked Michelangelo one day how he had done such beautiful work on the statue called David. And Michelangelo said to him, he said, I took my hammer and chisel, and I just started chiseling on this block of marble, and I knocked away all the pieces that wasn't David. And when he was finished, there was this beautiful statue of, he called David. And that's all that statue was made from, the pieces that were David. And I have in my life, because of this 12-step program by the book Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a craftsman. And that craftsman has chiseled away on me. And this is what, so far up to this point, what it's ended up to be. And I know there's a lot of work left on this statue. I know there's a lot of work. And thank God I have the tools right in this book to keep on chiseling away. You know, all these men that I talk about this morning, they all are not with us in the physical world today. Their spirit, their love of Alcoholics Anonymous, their dedication to trying to carry the message is still with us. And they all passed before I could tell them, face to face, eyeball to eyeball, how much I loved them, how much they meant to me. But, you see, it's too late now for me to do that. But, it's not too late for me to tell each and every one of you how much I love you and how important you are to my life today and how much I appreciate your dedication for trying to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to the next suffering alcoholic. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Next, we have Crow.
Hi, everybody. My name is Crow. I'm a grateful alcoholic and addict. really amazing to see all these people here. It's quite a privilege to be able to come to an international convention. And I didn't think I was going to make it this year. This will be my fourth, but this winter I got pretty sick. And I wasn't sure I was going to make it, and here I am. But I'll get to that a little later in my story. Just to get the name Crow out of the way, it's an old hippie nickname that I use, and there's an awful lot of people who know me by that name in Burlington, Vermont, which is where I'm from. Yay, Burlington. My sobriety date is May 1, 1987, and Burlington, thanks. Burlington is where I got sober. So I think I'll talk about the tools of sobriety in the order in which I use them. So it just comes from my experience of desperation. That's when I pick up the tools. And so my first act of desperation was coming in here in the first place. I came in here because I was intensely lonely, you know, deadly lonely. I wanted to kill myself. It wasn't as if I was... there were people around, and I had two kids who were living in my home, you know, so, and I had some friends, and I had a family who loved me, but I was just so lonely inside. And I can't say that I flew into the fellowship, and everybody greeted me with open arms, and I was just, nah. You know, I came in and I was different from everybody. You are not my kind of people. I didn't really want to have anything to do with you, but I had no better ideas. And because Burlington is a small town, we also have this street that goes in the middle of the town with no cars on it, like one of these street kind of malls, with a lot of different doorways. Early on, when I started going to meetings and realizing that Burlington was a small town, I had this image that if I did end up homeless and crazy and out of my mind or whatever, and I was huddled in one of these doorways in the main street of Burlington, Vermont, all crumbled up, you know, and miserable, somebody from the meeting, some meeting in the town, would come up to me and say, Crow, you know, what are you doing there? You know, pull yourself together and come to a meeting. And I just felt that the chances of that happening were pretty high. And just holding on to that image, that simple image that this fellowship was somehow going, and I didn't really want to hang out with you, that's for sure. You know, it isn't as if I had a big social life, but my face became known, my name is unusual, and I figured the chances are... Well, I'll tell you what the chances are. They're a lot better than the chances are of me getting chosen to speak at this conference. I was chosen to speak at the last minute, and it's like, and as I sat here and I saw all these people coming in, I said, oh, wow, 1 in 70,000 chances. So it was a pretty slim chance, and I think it's a higher power thing. But anyway, at least John reminded me of that. So the chances are pretty high in small Burlington, Vermont, that I would be found and somebody would pick me up. And I may or may not want to go, but at least I would be found. And I felt like that gave me some security. It was very basic, but it gave me some security. And then I moving along in sobriety. I had a whole 5 years, you know, things were going great and time for a relationship. You know, I was ready and I checked it out. Sponsorship was really important too. I want to tell you how I used a sponsor in those early days. I would call them up. I would call her up and I would say, what do I do now? You know, it wasn't a big problem. It was like, should I clean the closet or should I, you know, go take a walk? You know, they were very minor problems, but I didn't know how to live and I didn't know what to do next and I didn't know how to make any good choices. So I would just say, you know, what do I do now? And she would say, you know, she would usually suggest something I didn't want to do, you know, like clean your closet, you know, and, oh, do I have to? But that became, using a sponsor, asking for instruction, taking the instruction whether I wanted to or not, especially in early sobriety. It was a big tool that I used. And I was 45 when I came in here, and so I had done quite a bit of research on misery at that time. So I didn't really have a bunch of ideas. So anyway, I started using the sponsor in that way. And so I had the relationship. I had this relationship. I called up the sponsor, should I or should I not get into this relationship, you know? And she seemed like a good risk. She wasn't in the program, but she wasn't an alcoholic. And, you know, she broke up with me after 5 years or so. And broke my heart. She broke my heart. It was a breakup of grace and dignity, thanks to this program, you know. I didn't have anything to be ashamed of or apologize for. I just didn't want her to break up with me, you know. I didn't want to go back and face myself as a single woman in, like, middle age. Like, ooh, I didn't want to do that, you know. So I cried. I came to the meetings. This is another tool of sobriety that I use. I cried and I cried and I cried in the rooms. And so many people will come up to me afterwards and say, yeah, yeah, I've had breakups. Yeah, this is what happened to me when my heart was broken, and this is what I did. And it just, you know, it was just like, it was a way of bonding, and it was a way of getting closer. And I especially love it. I especially love it when men cry in this program. That always gives me help, gives me hope for humanity when I see men working on themselves. So, you know, well, anyway, I don't want to go too much into detail about that, but I just really appreciate when people cry in the rooms. And I know that there are some schools of thought that say, you know, take it to your sponsor, don't show that kind of thing, but I just, people crying and choking up just makes me feel like, you know, reminds me that it's real, language of the heart stuff. So I got through the breakup. I didn't raise my kids sober, did a lot of step work in it, and a few years down the road, my daughter ended up going to jail. And shame, 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 shame. And but, again, the same kind of thing. You bring it to a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, people come up to you, oh, yeah, I've been to jail. Yeah, my kids have been to jail. It's like there's not as much stigma in these rooms. There just isn't, you know. Like, I couldn't go to family parties, but I could definitely announce it to a bunch of strangers, which I'm doing right this very moment, you know. And that's really when I, you know, very heavily used just showing up, you know. I showed up for her, and she was in for a good chunk of time. It was a disease-related, alcohol-related problem, and she was in for 3.5 years, and I ended up having to raise her son. Now, I did not have confidence in my motherhood skills. I did not raise my kids sober, as I mentioned. So now, here I am at the age of 60 years old, I have a second chance, you know, to raise another kid. And it was like, oh. And, of course, it became one of the biggest gifts in my life, this second chance. It just became a huge gift to do it again sober. You know, I didn't have to raise him for 18 years, but the time that I had him, it wasn't as if I wasn't anxious. It wasn't as if I didn't feel trapped. It wasn't as if, you know, all those things that happened when I first raised my kids. But I had so much emotional and spiritual, and it was just such a different ballgame. I had so much help, you know, and I could see it as a gift. I tried real hard to see it as a gift when I raised my own kids the first time, but I was just too bondage of selfie, you know. I was just caught up in myself so much, trying to forge my way and whatever I was doing, that the kids suffered quite a bit. So I did step work, you know, 4 through 9 on my kids, and my kids and all my family members, and, you know, got rid of most of that guilt. I mean, it comes and goes in flashes, but it doesn't sit on me, you know, and haunt me. You know, and every time I started, the guilt comes back. I said, oh, I've done as much as I could. I did the steps on them, you know. I don't have to keep dwelling on this over and over and over again. I have a good relationship with my kids now. Terrific relationship with my grandkids. You know, both of them, both grandsons, 2 weeks apart, 6 feet tall, 16 years old. macho, and a very strange grandmother. But we have a great relationship. So, let's see. 10 more minutes. Wow. Okay. So let's see. More tools. Well, then I got sick. I got really sick. I got diagnosed with cancer and it came out of the blue. Didn't know. I didn't feel any symptoms. It was just, I got diagnosed kind of like by accident, going through a routine checkup. And they said, whoa, you know, your blood counts are off the charts. We got to do something about this. So I ended up having a bone marrow transplant. And if anybody's familiar with that, you have to stay away from crowds. And you have to be isolated for a while because they're working on your immune system, and your immune system gets real weak. And so all of a sudden, you know, I relied so heavily on the meetings and the fellowship and that I didn't have access to meetings the way I used to have, the way I had them. I was up in a hospital room. And I had a private room, which is, that was an advantage. But still, you know, and I had telephone to call people. But, you know, just walking into a room of alcoholics and walking into a meeting, you know, something deep inside just settles into me. And I didn't have that kind of thing. And so so I actually ended up finding other ways to access meetings. The way I found that worked for me initially was telephone meetings. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that, but at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, 7 days a week, you can dial a number and an access code, and you get into a meeting from people who are on that phone from all over the world, you know. And I would be in my hospital room, and I would say, don't disturb me for this hour, and I would get onto that telephone meeting, and that really made a difference. And I even sort of got to know some of the people, regulars, who would call into that meeting. I don't know if Kevin from Washington, D.C. is anywhere around here, but he probably is if he could make it. So stuff like that. So that became very important. And another tool that became very, very important to me that was the notion of surrender. I just surrendered. I knew that I was in the best hospital in the country for this particular disorder. And I decided I was going to surrender to the doctors. I wasn't going to argue with them. You know, I wasn't going to, I just wasn't going to fight what they told me to do. And, that kind of surrender I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned that surrender in Alcoholics Anonymous is a good thing. You know, it's a positive thing to do. It's not a sign of weakness, you know. And I had surrendered before, so I knew what the whole notion of surrender was about. And then my higher power showed up for me, not in the sense of my higher power cured me, you know. Yes, I'm in remission right now, and I'm very, very grateful for that, but I don't know how long that's going to last. It already came back once. This winter, it could come back again. Who knows? You know, I have no idea. So it's not as if I surrender to the fact that if I pray a lot to my higher power, then I'm going to stay and live as long as I want. But it's about coping with what comes my way is the tool that I learned. And I was in that hospital room, and I was not despairing, and I was not depressed. I got sad sometimes. I got scared sometimes. But I was emotionally and spiritually available to the connections that I made. And I said, well, this is higher power stuff. Where did this come from? Because I didn't come into this program with a higher power at all. Where did this come from? I didn't even know. I mean, I would pray because my sponsor told me to pray. And, you know, and I would do all that. And I felt like I was developing some sort of higher power. But when I watched myself go through that tremendous personal trial, not depressed and not completely despairing, I knew that that had to be a higher power helping me cope. And I said, where did that come from? And, well, the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is where I found it. I love to go to meetings where people describe the relationships to their higher powers and how that, you know, plays out for them. I just love that because I don't have, like, a real set notion, you know. I just liked, you know, I guess what they say is, you know, believe that we believe. And that's another slogan, these slogans that really help. And so I just want to say one more tool that I love in Alcoholics Anonymous is sponsees, you know. I love my sponsees. This morning was a perfect example. I'm walking over here, not a good sense of direction, not great feet, you know, limping over here, and can't find the room. This is a very big place with a lot of confusing corridors and escalators and elevators and I don't know what. And I'm not knowing where exactly I'm going, and the phone rings. And it's a sponsee, you know. So I sit down in a chair and found some chair, and I just sat down and I talked to her, and she's hurting this morning, you know. And that immediately takes me out of myself, you know. It immediately shows me that I have something to say, you know, to this person that might help them. And that gives me spiritual self-esteem, you know, and makes me feel connected, you know. And it's so accessible. I'm walking down a corridor lost, about to speak and impart all this information, and a sponsee calls me. It was such a gift, you know. I just loved it. And I told her at the end of the conversation, I'm going to use this example in my talk this morning because, you know, sponsees, as a sponsee, as somebody, when I call my sponsor, I used to think, oh, I don't want to bother them, you know, yeah, they're busy, da da da. But when a sponsee calls me, I remember how important it is to me and how it keeps me sober. So I just, like, it's such a gift. So that has helped me call a sponsor. And I, 28 years of sobriety, I still call a sponsor once and twice a week and see him face to face and ask for direction. And, I did it. It's, you know, because I just like to hear it from somebody else instead of in my own head. So anyway, I will end with a deep, deep expression of gratitude for being here. The voice of God. And it's great seeing my friends from Burlington and all over, so thanks for letting me speak.
Well, I'll get up quickly and say, here's Tony.
My name is Tony. I'm an alcoholic. And it's great to be here, and it's great to be sober. And I'm sober through Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for that I'm truly grateful. You know, sobriety date is 14 August 1994, and I'm the baby of this bunch here, so... And thank you. I was just getting up because I'm on an edge over there. So,
don't go over the edge.
So I had to get up. But, you know, it's just an honor and a privilege to be here, standing in front of you all at an international convention and being called to ask to do something of this. You know, I feel it's an honor. You know, because where I came from and what I did, I didn't get these type of honors. You know, didn't nobody really want to listen to me. I mean, actually just sat and didn't go nowhere, you know. That didn't happen, you know. I can tell you that what happened in my life is that way before I took a drink or a drug or anything else, you know, I learned how to rob, steal, cheat, pick up a whole lot of bad sexual behavior habits and a whole lot of other things. I can tell you that happened to me way before I took a drink. And what happened is that when I took that drink, it was able to make me be able to live with me. And that worked for a long time until it didn't no more. But by that time, I couldn't stop taking the drink because that's the only way I knew how to survive. You know. And I came here in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I found out about I lived with just 1,000 forms of fear. You know, I was just so fearful of everything. I was fearful of life and everything. So, you know, when I first got introduced to this program, I didn't want this program. I was in the military, and they sent me off to treatment. And I was once again doing my con thing to try to stay in the military. So, you know, I let them send me to treatment, and they took me to these A&A meetings. And A&A was not my problem. I had other problems, and they weren't talking about that, so I got nothing out of it. Yeah, I didn't know what it was about. And after some more research and everything, I can tell you that when I came back willingly to try it again. You know, I can tell you when I got here, I wasn't a really house drinker or doing too many things in the house because I didn't want my kids seeing what I was really doing. So I did everything outside. But what they got, what my family got, was this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He was very unapproachable. He was always, no, I can't make it. I have something else to do. He just wasn't available. And that's how I arrived here. Yeah. And my wife at the time allowed me to, she was stationed in Hawaii, and she allowed me to come to Hawaii. You know, she took me back one more time. And when I got there, I said, well, I guess I'm going to just try this thing. And when I got there, I got into the treatment and everything, and it was suggested at the treatment center that I go to this particular home group. And by the way, where I live at now in Pahoa, Hawaii, my home group is Fat City, but we're on my diet. But the home group that was, the group that was suggested to me to go to was a group called Black Experience. It was. It was. And I'm going to go through this real quick, like, because, you know, I went there because of a suggestion, but I didn't know why I needed to go to Black Experience. I already knew how to be black. That was the message I got from saying go to that group. You know? But that started my journey, you know, and John talked about the fellowship and, you know, and the thing, and I can tell you that the fellowship for me is very important. It's a very important tool. It allows me to be able to be around people like me. They pick me up. They show me how to have fun without drinking. You know, they just show me a lot of things, you know. So I went to that group, and that was a service-oriented group. I didn't know it at the time. Because what happened was I was standing up there, I was sitting in a chair back there in the back, in the corner, in the back. And this guy was sharing, and he was sharing about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was a big guy, he had a deep voice, you know, and the more he talked, the madder I got. The more he talked, the madder I got. And I just couldn't wait to get back to that treatment center on Monday or Tuesday, whatever day I was going on, so I could give this counselor peace of my mind, because he went and told that man everything about me, and he standing up at the pole. They're telling all you all, you know? So I had the rest of the week to cool down, you know. But what I really want to do here, you know, is tell you about the way I use the tools of the 12 steps, which is in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and which is one of the biggest tools that I use, you know. But the first thing was to come in here and sit down long enough to get honest with me. And I thought it was about me getting honest with you, and it was getting honest with me. You know, that in that first step, I had to admit to my innermost self that I'd be alcoholic, because I was not alcoholic when I came in here. In spite of how much I drink, I was not alcoholic. I was a few other things, but alcoholic wasn't one of them. And I was able to get honest with myself. And I was able to get honest with myself because as I read that book, because that home group that I'm talking about did things like step studies and all they taught me. You know, and I got a sponsor, and sponsor is very important. That's another two that's very important, along with the fellowship. You know, and when I got into that book and I found out what it described as a real alcoholic, I had went through all three stages. You know, I started out as a moderate drinker. I became a hard drinker that I couldn't stop because of you told me anything, you know, catastrophic would happen in my life. You know, like, you know, if you keep doing this, they're going to kick you out of the military. That wasn't enough for me. And then I've seen where they came up with the real alcoholic. And that described me. That described all of me. For everything that was going on with me, the real alcoholic described me, because that was my behavior. And then you gave me open-mindedness. You allowed me to open my mind long enough to believe that there was a power greater than myself. And I didn't need to be restored to sanity because I wasn't crazy. But I didn't know what y'all was talking about either. But it allowed me to open up my mind to get to the conclusion that, you know, I wasn't sound. I didn't have the soundness of mind. I wasn't whole. Some slices were missing. Some slices were missing from my pie, you know. And then you kept going on and told me all I had to do was being willing. If I stay willing, I can get my slices back. I can become whole again. So I stayed open-minded and found my higher power. I found mine. And that's what I needed to do. And that's what the program asked me to do. It asked me to find my higher power. You know. Because yours might not work for me. I need to find my own. I can use yours for a little bit, but after that, you know, at some point I need to find my own. And I had to become willing to believe in that power that I called my own. And I had to, you know, to start trusting that power that I became willing to believe in, which allowed me to do the fourth step. And that was take a real good look at me. Look at my resentments, my fears, and my sexual conduct. Now, I don't know why in the big book they only talk about looking at three things. They say, look at them three things. You know? So there must be three very important things that would have me with this affliction of life. It must have been. And because I was willing, and because I started beginning getting the trust into this higher power, I was able to sit down. And I was able to write down some things that I tell you that you would never, never, ever was going to hear come from me. You know. I was never going to let anybody know I was sexually molested. My man, no. No, 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 no. Because that would make me something that I'm not. And I have no problem saying that today. Because these are the things that I had to get right with me. And that started a whole bunch of resentments, you know. I resented just about everything because, see, the bottom line was Tony wanted Tony things the way Tony wanted. And I wanted those things way before I took a drink. And if you didn't give it to me, I would go out and get it another way. You know, my parents had to live through that. And then I found out about this fear thing. One of the things that was really crippling me, that wouldn't allow me to move forward. I would do some things and then I'll run away. Do a few things, then I'll run away. And the whole time, I'm still trusting this higher powers. I'm writing this stuff down. And then I had to get to my sexual conduct. And all these people I heard. And because I trusted in my higher power, and I was still willing, I sat down with a man. And I discussed this stuff with him. And I told him all that stuff. And when I got through telling him all that, he said, congratulations. And then asked me, was I willing to have these defects of character removed from me? And at the time, I didn't know what he was asking me. But he also said, what's going to happen from here forward is a lot of things going to be thrown your way. And you got to make a decision. And that's just how life is. Ever since I said I was willing to have these character defects removed from me, my God just didn't come down and strike me clean. That's what I really wanted, but you know, it was said. That was the easiest, softer way than I thought about it. Strike me clean. You know how that lightning come down and strike you? It do a little bit more than clean you too, you know? I'm glad it didn't have to be that, you know? I'm glad it was a thing of me being able to now start looking at my behavior. Because by now, the drinking, the thinking of drinking, the wanting of drinking, the solution of drinking, that had already been lifted from me. So it wasn't about that. So as I went along, and I only got 2 minutes, I got that. And I made them amends, and that just really, truly opened up my whole heart and everything. And then now I do the maintenance steps. Everything I just talked about, I just do that on a daily basis. I just do that on a daily basis, you know. And the biggest reward is the 12th step. If I'm working with another, what will happen for me is I get a chance to look at me on a daily basis in depth. Because looking at you, I'm just looking at me. You know, and I'm going to say this in closing. You know, I was talking about that family and how that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde person came in and, you know, into their life and they didn't know what to do with it. You know, and I have to say this because, you know, I'm just truly honored to be standing up in front of you. But what I'm more and more truly honest and happy about is that my youngest daughter is sitting here and she came down to be with me to celebrate her 26th birthday. In a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That doesn't happen where I come from. And it's only to the grace of God and the fellowship of this program and a loving home group and loving sponsors that allow me to be here standing before you. Thank you.
Those were all three very wonderful talks, and I thank you, and I know we thank you. I think I just realized that I was supposed to, like, get up and say some words of wisdom in between each one, which is why we have a lot of time left. So I will say some words of wisdom now. You can take notes if you wish. You heard a lot of great tools here, and I'm going to mention some that my favorite. One thing that I think is really important is that we have three legacies. We have three legacies, and they are recovery, unity, and service. And I am a great believer If you don't choose all three of them, you're missing out on the medicine. And so we do our recovery through our steps, we do our unity through our traditions, and we do our service through the concepts. Anybody, I won't ask you to raise your hands, because God forbid, as alcoholics, we never want to show that we don't know everything. But there may be some of you in here who have not yet heard that we have concepts. We have 12, of course, we have 12. We don't do anything without it being 12. But they are the concepts that help describe how we do our service, both world service and you can use them at other levels. And if you haven't gotten into the concepts, I'll be honest, the traditions, they can be a little dry. They're not as interesting as the steps because the traditions aren't about me, and it's only interesting when it's about me. The concepts can be a little dry, too, until you see them in action, and then they're really pretty exciting. And so I suggest to you, I recommend to you that if you've done the steps and you find you're a little stuck, you might try doing the traditions. The way I learned about the traditions, someone said to me, less problems of money, property, and prestige divert me from my primary purpose. Can money divert me from my primary purpose? You better believe it. When I'm worried about my bills, it can divert me from my primary purpose. Can prestige divert me from my primary purpose? You better believe it. When I'm thinking you're doing better than I'm doing, I can get real diverted. So you might consider the traditions. If you've finished the steps and you're looking for something, am I self-supporting through my own contributions? You know, there are times when financially, no, maybe I'm not, but am I emotionally self-supporting through my own contributions? There are times when I'm not. Thank God for you during those times. And then you might look at the concepts. In the concepts, we talk about the voice of the minority opinion. Being willing to listen to someone who doesn't agree with us. That's what that means. Ooh, are there times when I don't want to listen to someone who doesn't agree with me? Pretty frequently. But, you know, that's in our concepts. Am I willing to allow you the level of responsibility that is equal to what I expect from you? Am I willing to allow you that in my life? That's in our concepts. So you might look at those. And service, being of service to our fellowship, I think is a great tool of sobriety. And that doesn't mean that you've got to become, you know, the head of your district committee member or a trustee to the General Service Board. It means that maybe you make coffee or maybe you're the greeter at the door. I had a friend say to me years ago, do service where AA connected to you. If you came in through a treatment facility, you might consider taking a meeting to a treatment facility. If you came in through the courts, you might take a meeting to people who are, you know, talk with the people who come in with those papers. If it was the person at the door who greeted you and made you feel welcome, be a greeter. If you needed that cup of coffee, make coffee. If the pamphlets, for me it was the pamphlets. The first AA meeting I went to, I felt very strange. And I went up and there was Letter to a Woman Alcoholic and So You Think You're Too Young. And those two pamphlets meant that it was okay for me to be an AA. So be the literature chairperson for your group. But find a place to be of service, because there is no way in the world I can give back to AA anything like what AA has given to me. So I recommend that if you're new in the program, stick with recovery until you got it, you got it under pretty solidly. But look at the traditions. Go forward with the unity. Look at a way of being of service and look at the concepts. So those are some of the ways that I some of the tools that I like to use in sobriety. Now, we've got about a half an hour. Well, really, no, because there's some closing things I've got to do. So we've got about maybe 20 minutes. I'm embarrassed. Yes, I do make mistakes. They sent me a lovely email with what I was supposed to do here. It's in my room. So I'm just going to sort of bust loose here. I don't know if I'm supposed to ask for comments, But we've got 20 minutes, so I'm going to ask if there's someone who, you've heard many wonderful tools for sobriety, if there is a tool that you haven't heard and you would like to share it with this group, you will have to come up front so that we can get it on the tape. And you've got about a minute, and I will stop you without hesitation. That's my job as chair. But I'd love to hear from you. If there's a tool that that you found to be really helpful in sobriety and wasn't mentioned, please come on up and chat for a minute. Come on up. You. And don't make the mistake I did. Don't give your last name.
Steve Alcoholic. God, this is my fifth AA International. I've always wanted to speak at one. I just wanted to share one tool that has helped me so much. And it only has taken about 20 years of sobriety to get willing to not just think about doing it, but actually start a practice and do it. And it's the 11-step meditation. And we got to go to an AA History Lovers Symposium in Sedona a couple years ago and learned about two-way prayer that they used originally in the Oxford group and early AAers adopted, and that early quiet time in the morning. And that has become so sacred and useful to me, to get up early before the sun and have that quiet time of being quiet and breathing and the two-way prayer, communing with my higher power and getting direction for that 24-hour period, and adding to my gratitude list. Thanks.
Sir, you next.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kathy, and I am an alcoholic. Wow, this is my first international experience, and who'd have thought? Oh, wow. Unbelievable. Overwhelming. But one thing that I have been taught early on is to also have a network of women. You know, if you can't reach your sponsor, of course I have a sponsor I love and dear. I love her dearly, but sometimes she's not always there at the second that I'm breaking down, you know. So I always have other women that I can call. And, you know, even as I left New Jersey, I had a gal who couldn't come, and she just gave me her spiritual energy that I am carrying with me today, you know. So anyway, I can't wait to the Our Father tonight. I mean, I heard that is like something really, really cool. So, wow, love it. And God bless everybody.
Morning, everybody. My name is Dave Dover. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
Tony, I wanted to thank you very much. He probably doesn't remember me, but I was over in Hawaii babysitting some grandkids because my kids were back on the mainland, and I couldn't seem to find a chip. So they said, "Well, go to Black Experience. They've got a bunch of chips there." So it's a Saturday night meeting down by the base, and I went there. And they let me speak a little bit, that I didn't know anything about it. So I guess I was one of the first ones to share because I had a lot of years and whatever. So I went to sit down. They said, no, stand back up. And all of a sudden somebody came up with a lay, and they put a lay on me. And I sat back down and said, no, stand back up. And somebody else came up and put a lay on me, and then another person did. Then they brought some nuts up, and they put some nuts around my neck. And then they put some shells around my neck. And then they put some more lays around my neck. And then they put some more on there. And they kept coming up, and they kept putting them on. And they kept putting them on. Kept putting them on. And that night when I went home to my kids, and I had to wake everybody up because it was about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, the flowers had piled up. all the nuts underneath and everything like that were still there, you know. And that was the gift that you guys gave me, a black experience. Thanks for letting me share.
This gentleman, then you.
My name is Paul. I'm a recovering alcoholic. And I've had a kind of unusual experience coming out of my life that I'm 88 years old. And like most senior citizens, I read the obituaries. And I get great pleasure out of reading people's lives when they died earlier than I. So anyway, I live in a senior living place where I'm surrounded with people who shared the same history that I did, which is very comforting. When we say the war, we mean World War II. And what I wanted to share with you is that I've become very interested in the two most revolutionary things or transformational things that happen to us in life, birth and death. And because I'm closer to death than I am to birth right now, I've gone with the Vermont Nurses Association to learn how to work with people in respite care in the last stages of their lives when you can be very alone and frightened about the advent of your passing on. That's my word, passing on. And I went into a very intensive training by the Nurse Association for several weeks of weekly meeting. And one of the things that came out was something, a word you've never heard, it's not even in the dictionary. Let me see if I can remember the word. I think I've forgotten the word. Companioning. Companioning. Companioning means visiting people with a lengthy 3-hour visit and listening very deeply to where they are coming from. You're not there to give your idea of the afterlife or anything like that. But when they ask a leading question like, do you really think there's anything that goes on after we die? And one of the things that companioning teaches us is to turn it around and say, well, what do you think about that? And then listening whatever they think about that. Letting them get in touch with their own inner resources and letting there be a discussion, but mainly you're listening to where they're coming from and they're listening to themselves as they talk and finding the healing that's already deeply embedded in them. Not to give them answers, but to hear them discover their own answers. So I wanted to share that because I think it applies to us in AA that we'd never lay a trip on another person about where they're coming from and the problems they're struggling, but we do draw from our own experience, and then maybe they find a parallel thing. We're not laying a trip on anyone, and I think companioning is this not laying a trip, but really, really listening.
My name is Mary. I'm an alcoholic from North Carolina. And this is my first international. I'm very grateful to be here. Very grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for my life. And what you taught me was to let go and let God. Well, I didn't know how to do that at all. And I couldn't let go of, you know, all of the racing thoughts in my head and the what ifs and the if onlys. And it's just a really practical tool somebody gave me. They said, why don't you try a God box? And I didn't know what that was. They said, any box will do. And the thing that you're thinking about, that's driving you crazy, that you're worrying about, that you can't let go of, you write that down on a piece of paper. And you put that piece of paper into the box. And while it's in the box, it's God's. You don't have permission to mess with it. And then if you need to take that back, you've got to go to your box, take the piece of paper out, fret a little bit, and then when you're ready, you can give that back to him. It was just a really tangible way for me to begin this letting go and letting God. And I'm still practicing on a daily basis. You know, that's what somebody taught me, don't worry about working steps. Let's just practice. Thanks.
I have three people in line, and we'll see if we can get beyond that.
Good morning, family. I'm an alcoholic named Patrick. I like the principles before, but the principles before the steps. Honesty through. Oh, I can't remember all of them, but you know what they are.
My name's Kim. I'm an alcoholic. I'm one of those that I don't like to hear my voice. Some of the tools that I use, because I've got a wacky schedule that has me at weird hours, speaker tapes. Fortunately, my husband has a collection of like 300 of the little stinkers, so if I'm commuting, I can listen to a speaker tape. Grapevines help. And in the workplace, you know, practice those principles in all your affairs. The serenity prayer. A couple of mantras. Not my circus, not my monkeys. That's their drama. And then a big one is principles over personality. You know, focus on the principles, not their personality that drives you batshit. Bat poop crazy. And this is my first, and it brings me into another one, which is the gratitude list. So, thank you.
My name's Doug. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 3rd, 2011. That's the day I was arrested. And I was in bad shape. God saved my life that day. I guess what I'm fixing to tell you is not something to be proud of, but... 5 county jails and 1 state prison is what brought me here this morning. I was released last week. In the Washington County Jail, that's where I was arrested. That's the first jail I was in. The nurse and the doctor worked real hard with me to get me back in good shape. It took them a year to get me to a place where I could just function normally. And then the sheriff asked me to be his trustee. I wrote World Service Office and got a big book. There was no meeting in the Sandersville Jail. So my tool recovery is if there's a need for a meeting, start one, which is what the sheriff and I did. And it's called the Change for Better Group in the Washington County Jail that meets twice a month. The black guys down there call it the Mo Better Group. Thanks for letting me share.
This gentleman, and then I saw a hand in that direction. You're after this gentleman, and then I'll come.
Good morning. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic and a member in good standing of the Early Risers Group in Burlington, Vermont. Come on. Any Vermonters here? All right. Let's hear it. Other group members here. And Crow. My first international was 1975 in Denver. And we were so thrilled. There were 19,000 people in Denver. And we had the world's largest coffee pot. Now I guess we're probably going to have about 4 people for every 1 we had in Denver. I wanted to say I hit a very, very low point in my sobriety maybe about 8 years ago. My wife passed away, and I was a basket case. My friend Loretta, wherever she is, knows there she is. She was one of the people that helped pick up the pieces for me and her darling husband, Chuck. But there's a lot of time at night, and I was laying awake all night long, and I couldn't bring myself together. I had like a butcher knife in my chest, and I just was grieving. It went on and on and on. And somebody said, you know, you're really online AA. We have online AA. You don't have to sit there all night. And so they have an online intergroup. In fact, over in the Omni, they've got a welcome center by the reception. And you go aa-intergroup.org, and then all of the groups and chats and telephone groups and all the other online activities are listed there, and you can just join and participate. The other thing I found out was that AA gets a whole lot of 12-step calls by email from the Internet. And you cannot write to AA.org for help and really get help in the sense of another alcoholic contacting you. But from AA.org, there is a link to the online intergroup, because there's a committee called the Steppers Committee or the 12-Step Committee who specifically handle all those calls for help that come in. And it's 24/7. I joined it 6 years ago, I guess. I haven't participated the past few months because of some health issues, but anyway, it is a wonderful thing. If you are on that committee, you open up your email in the morning, and there's a whole bunch of brand new newcomers. Help, I need help. How about, what is AA? I have problems, or I'm already in AA, and my sponsor's giving me problems. All these things, so anyway. it's a wonderful thing. So you can do AA service by way of the AA intergroup. You stop over at the, I think it's the Elm or Oak, or one of those tree rooms over there in the Omni, and see about it. Thanks.
After this gentleman, the lady right here, and the gentleman right there, and I think that will be it.
My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. July 7th, 97. And I want to thank everybody in this room for helping keep me sober today. For me, my sponsor said to get a best friend and have a best friend who knows me better than anybody else in the world, who is not afraid to call me on my bull, and it will be honest and tell me the truth. Because when my sponsor's not around, my best friend is. And he always knows by my tone of voice and what's going on when I'm not right. And he'll call me on it. Other tools I found are our other books that we have in a program, One Day at a Time, As Bill Sees It, so forth. And then another thing I learned in this program is the program can't always fix all my problems. Sometimes I have to go sit down with a counselor or somebody outside. I wasn't willing to see that. And a sponsor in a program said, I can't answer all of your questions. He was honest. He looked me straight in the eye and he says, you need to go sit down with somebody one-on-one. And you need to deal with the problems, because your monsters will come up and drag you back down to the bottom again. And for me, it's what I needed. Because my story mimics yours. I was there. I was abused. And I couldn't say that. And I wouldn't say that. And I was scared to say that. Because of what people would think of me. Today, it's not about what people think of me. It's about who I am inside that makes a difference, that keeps me from picking up that drink. And I'm glad to be here today. Thanks.
Angie, alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 26, 1978. And I wanted to add something about that God box thing. I used to really worry and obsess about a lot of things, and I'd use the God box, and I never threw away a piece of paper. And so sometimes if I'd be really worried about something, I would open up my God box, and I would read all my old pieces of paper. And when I was single, I would literally pull pieces of paper out of that box that had guys' names on them that I did not know who they were. And occasionally I would pull one out and I would say, that jerk, I was thinking about him that much. Once I kept pulling out pieces of paper that said I wanted to buy a home, buy a condo. And about 12 years later, when I pulled those pieces of paper out, I'm laughing because I'm putting papers in wanting to sell a condo. So what it showed me, it demonstrated that in a way that nothing else could, that whatever I was worrying about was really going to pass. And I wanted to, I'm with Steve, I wanted to add something about that two-way prayer if anybody's interested. There is a remarkable website called twowayprayer.org. He's got a couple videos. He has examples. The way that helped me is that I couldn't stay quiet very long. And I had a difficulty with meditation, but by doing the two-way prayer, I feel like I get a good connection with my higher power, even during the times when I can't actually stay quiet. And it was really helpful. Thank you.
I am Marshall, a grateful recovering alcoholic, 27 years sober. I come from Uganda, a country which tops the rest of the world in alcohol consumption, a country where we don't have more than 40 members or 50 members of AA. A country where I found myself working the program 200 miles away from the group which had introduced me to AA. The tool that saved me then was to write to other AA members world over, and I thank all those who responded to my letters. A tool which I believe can still work in countries where people stay in remote areas and communicating or going to meetings is very difficult. I'm very grateful to my friends in Minneapolis Intergroup who sponsored my coming to the States and attending my first ever convention in my life. I'm so grateful that even my sponsor is present in this room, and he has been training me. I've been here for 2 weeks. I've been staying in Minneapolis on learning how to use the tools that we have learned here. So this was the first session I attended, and I'm so grateful. Thank you so much.